Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buchanani. We're coming to you after a very impressive rout of the hapless, hopeless Purdue Boilermakers. Chris, how are you doing?
I am doing very well, Jim. Much better than the Purdue football fans. I think they're very happy to get that upset win over number two Alabama on Friday night, because Saturday afternoon did not go so well.
Well, I'll tell you what was interesting. Our colleague Dustin Schutte, who is the Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer, little secret, I'm just saying this to you, Chris, not to anybody else. Dustin is a Purdue guy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he texted me on Friday night about he was at Purdue and was visiting with some Penn State fans. So he was giving his reaction to that, saying the Penn State fans were great. He, of course, joked with them a bit. And I said, oh, you're going to be, you know, at the Purdue-Penn State game. That's great. He goes, oh, no way. I'm here for a basketball game. No way I'm going to stick around for that sure-to-be disaster. So it was Dustin, as a Purdue guy, wanted nothing to do with this game, Chris, and I can't blame him.
Yeah, I you have to understand, and of course we have perspective on this at Penn State, just in the inverse, really, that there's limited amount of resources to go around, and especially if you're a program like Purdue that doesn't have access to the financial resources of a Penn State, Michigan, or Ohio State, you got to make some calculated decisions about where you're going to invest. And if you've got their history in football, their history in basketball, and you're in Indiana, it's not a tough decision.
No, it's not a tough decision at all. But you alluded to Penn State being the inverse. Basketball is what struggles. How about Penn State hoops Friday night against Virginia Tech, Chris?
Still plenty of room on the bandwagon, folks. I love what Mike Rhodes is building in Happy Valley. And again, you keep realistic perspective on what you ought to be able to reasonably expect from the program. And I think he is testing and set to continue testing the outer boundaries of that. So I'm excited. Yeah. Jump on the Penn State hoops bandwagon, folks.
And at the very least, this is a fun team to watch. They play a fun style. I didn't mean to get off on basketball here, Chris, but I was really impressed by them Friday night. They play. I didn't know how well their style of play, which if you haven't seen them, they play man-to-man pressure, double team trapping all over the court. It's fun and exciting. I'm not sure how well it will translate against the better teams who might take advantage of that, but against a ACC team in Virginia Tech, it looked really good.
I'll tell you what, if you're Penn State, you want a puncher's chance in conference play. The Big Ten's going to be tough this year, and I think Penn State's going to be right there in the mix. And we've got, too, Jim, what looks to be a legitimate big man, which is like a unicorn in today's college basketball.
Yes, and especially at Penn State, nice to see that. And what I also like, Chris, is they've got multiple options on offense. It's not built around one guy. They have multiple guys who can score, who could get their own shot off. Excellent to see.
Right, which is more than we can say for Penn State's passing game, perhaps.
Thank you. I needed the segue to get us back to football, Chris. And I'm going to
not my
use...
first rodeo, Jim.
Well, let's get to it. Let's get to football. Before we get to the wide receivers, let's just start in general. What was it you wanted to see in this game? Let's face it. This was going to be a glorified scrimmage right from the start. We all knew that. But what was it going into the game you were looking for, and did you get it?
Yes, super simple. Number one, stay healthy. Number two, don't sleepwalk against an opponent you know you're going to beat so badly that you give the committee any reason to raise their eyebrows looking at the final score, because I'm sure they're not going to watch anything about the game. Penn State accomplished both of those things. Survive in advance. Charlie Mike, on to the next.
And Chris, it was an impressive win. You mentioned staying healthy, putting up a score that the playoff committee can't question in any way. And we also, I think we were looking for, or I was looking for, that quick start. Let's put this team away quickly. let's not let it linger. Let's not make it a 7-7 game midway through the second quarter where somebody who's just checking scores sees that and says, oh, wait a minute, could something be happening there?
Yes.
And they put it away very quickly. Their first two possessions, Chris, touchdown, touchdown, 9-play drive, 10-play drive. The first one, 9 plays, 75 yards, took almost 5 minutes off the clock. Second possession, 10 plays, 93 yards, 5.5 minutes off the clock. It's 14-0. It's still the first quarter, and the game is over.
I think that about sums it up. I got to give just some credence, Jim, to the crowd at that game. I was expecting the stands to be half or more than half empty. And credit to the Boilermakers fans. Dustin Schutte may not have shown up for that game, but plenty of other Boilermaker fans did. And at this point in the season, that team is just absolutely dreadful. They are not just the worst team in the Big Ten. They're one of the worst teams in college football. And the amount of black and gold in the stands on a Saturday afternoon in mid-November, I thought was pretty impressive. So credit to them. But yeah. You could tell everyone in the stadium knew the game was over at 14-0.
Exactly. And credit the announcers for pointing out the fans and the support there.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm good with that for Purdue fans. And what must be frustrating, and I'm basing this on this game, it's not that they're physically overmatched, which they are. Penn State is just so far beyond Purdue talent-wise. And you see, if you saw Purdue's schedule, oh boy. Oregon, Ohio State, Penn State, and they've yet to play Indiana. And also they have Notre Dame as an out-of-conference game.
Right.
But what was interesting is how bad they played as far as breakdowns on defense, where you just see a Penn State receiver wide open in the touchdown, standing alone. That, to me, is the things that there's no excuse for. That's not a physical mistake. That's mental. They're making mistakes like that. That's the reason why, you know, I thought when I started hearing some of this, gee, the coach is in trouble and this is just his second year, that's why the coach should be in trouble when you have breakdowns like that.
Yeah. And that said, I felt like they were even a little bit less checked out than I thought they might be for this game, to be honest. So, you know, I that's not necessarily a compliment, right? Like, you would almost rather be able to say, well, you know, we're 1-8. The team is just basically taking this one off. I don't think that was the case. They're just not very good.
Yes, they're not good players, and they're not well coached at all. Those aren't the kind of mistakes you want to see from a well-coached team where you can say, you know what, give them a chance to get more talent. They play hard. They play smart. No, they don't even play smart.
But, right. when you're getting beaten like a drum, in this case, the world's largest drum, and you look like that, you want to maybe be able to use the excuse of, you know, if guys weren't really trying at this point in the season. No, they were trying, and they still looked like that.
Exactly. So, and I'll tell you what adds to it too for Purdue is that you look at intrastate team Indiana and how quickly Indiana turned their whole future around. And if you're Purdue, who has a better football history than Indiana does, you say, hey, why not us?
I am sure Kurt Cignetti is probably going to get a lot of coaching hires at mid to lower tier programs fired before their time, because everyone is going to look at Indiana now and say, well, if Cignetti could do it at Indiana, for God's sakes, why can't you? And look, since we're on the topic, Jim, and you know, neither one of us wants to spend an entire hour breaking down Penn State Purdue. I do just want to talk about Indiana for a moment. They've got their big game coming up this week, and Cignetti just got the big contract extension. He now, at least on paper, is making almost as much as James Franklin is in year two. I'm curious on your thoughts about him and how quote unquote real what he's doing in Bloomington is right now. I have some thoughts, but I just love to get your take on it. We haven't really talked about it this season.
No, we haven't. And obviously very impressed. Mike, the big question is he brought a lot of players with him from James Madison.
Yeah.
He also brought other players in. His quarterback came from Ohio, I believe. Ohio U, not Ohio State, Ohio U.
Real good player, though.
Yes, yes, real good player. Now, to their credit, he's had some injury issues, and the backup has come in and played pretty well. All very impressive. But yeah, in the back of my head, Chris, is this the same story we heard at Michigan State a few years ago?
Sure.
Is this the same story, you know, Florida State? A year ago was so good with all of those transfer portal players, you know, going a few years back, remember Charlie Weiss making such a great first impression at Notre Dame?
That's cool.
I get scared about, you know, making that big commitment after 1 year, but if you're Indiana, I don't think you have any choice but to do this. If they didn't, he'd be gone. And this is your one shot. It may or may not be a permanent thing with Cignetti, but this is your shot at Indiana. You got to take it.
Yeah, and he's a little bit older. There aren't a lot of marquee jobs opening up. He's familiar with this part of the country. For sure, it was the smart move for them to pony up and try to keep him there. Your thinking's kind of along the same lines as mine. If I had to guess, I could kind of tell right out of the right from the jump that the Mel Tucker thing was a little bit of a mirage at Michigan State. I don't think that's the case here in Indiana. I think he's legit. But to your point, he had a winning team that, to his credit, he did basically build himself. But a winning team that he coached and that knew each other and were all upperclassmen from JMU that he could more or less transplant to Bloomington and play a pretty easy schedule with. So we'll see where he goes from here. But I do think you have to at least put that little asterisk on there. But we're going to learn a lot on Saturday when they go to Columbus.
We definitely are. But I also think, I know the schedule hasn't been great, but they've shredded people.
Correct.
It's not like they've been getting lucky, you know, a bounce goes their way, like we've seen at Miami and BYU and some other surprise undefeated teams. You know what, Chris? We're up against the break here. I want to continue this conversation, though, because it's really fascinating to me. We'll do that right after this break. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buchanani. Chris, we're not just talking Penn State football, but we're talking college football across the entire landscape. And we kind of reached Indiana and how they've been playing, just the surprise of the year in college football. Still undefeated. Big matchup against Ohio State next week. A lot of folks still think that they're a mirage, and we're going to find that out next week, that Ohio State's going to burst that bubble. But you mentioned Michigan State the couple of years. I brought them up as there's an example of, you know, the one-year wonder. Then they come back down to reality. And it sounds like you and I are both in agreement that there's something a little more going on here at Indiana. But what is it that makes you feel this is different than what we saw with Mel Tucker a few years ago?
Well, to be clear, I think there will be some regression to the mean. I don't expect Indiana to go 11-1 every season. Now, there are a lot of factors that all conspired to put them in the position to have a window of opportunity. And again, to their credit, they've taken full advantage of it. And now they have a chance to do something unparalleled, unbelievable, amazing, if they can knock off Ohio State this weekend, which for the record, I don't think they're going to. But just to be in that position is uncharted waters for that program. Actually, real quick, funny aside, Jim, my obligatory pregame show co-host, Brandon Noble, had to miss a show a couple weeks ago because he was down in Georgia for his youngest son's graduation from basic training. And so, you know, he had been in basic since August, so had no idea what was going on in the outside world. So they had a couple of days before his graduation, and they got to sit down and watch college football together. This was Ohio State weekend. And Brandon told the story on the air the next week that they flashed up the graphic of the remaining teams in college football that were undefeated. And he said, Jack, his son, almost fell out of his chair when he saw Indiana on the list.
That's a great story. And it's who would have thunk it, you know, when the season started. Now, I name dropped our colleague Dustin Schutte earlier. I will put this out. He was, before the season, he said, Jim, Indiana's going to be better than you think. Michigan's going to be awful. I see them losing five games. Well, he might be underestimating with Michigan. They a good chance they'll have a sixth loss before the season is over. But yeah, he was right on about Indiana. But just so I'm not just throwing roses at Dustin, he also said he thought Purdue would be better than people thought, too. So he got two out of three of his preseason picks taken care of. All right, let's move on. I know
real quick, Jim, just, I realize I didn't answer your question. And to Jack's surprise, it's been a great college football season in general. And so the rise of Indiana, just one of the many great storylines. You mentioned surprise undefeated teams. Well, BYU no longer among that rank, thanks to the Big 12 Giant Slayer in Kansas. But why do I think Indiana might be a little bit more real than the mirage we saw in Michigan State? It's just the track record of Kurt Cignetti. I mean, the guy I respect, you come in, you talk all that smack, and then you back it up. But he does the whole I win, Google me thing. It's true. The guy's a winner, and he's got a great track record. And so I think he will keep that program respectable. But just like you did see with Mel Tucker at Michigan State, or, you know, Mike Norvell at Florida State, when you live and die by the transfer portal, you can take wild swings from season to season because they're not culture guys. You're bringing in mercenaries, and sometimes everything can come together and you can have an unbelievable season. And then the next year, all the pieces might not fit together and it can implode on you. Now, maybe they're not going to go from, you know, whatever, 11-1, 12-0 to where Florida State is. But as I said, I think there's going to be some regression to the mean. I just think Cignetti is a guy who can manage that to the point where you don't have the highest of highs and then a complete disaster afterward.
Well, the other part to this, Chris, is I think in doing statistical analysis of these type of things, a 12 game regular season, no matter how you put, that's a small sample size. Okay.
For sure.
Now, if you are shredding teams, if you know, like Alabama over the last decade, Georgia over the last half decade, where you're just shredding everybody, it's pretty obvious it's not a bounce of the ball that is determining whether you win or lose. But BYU, Miami, some of those teams, they've been dancing through the raindrops and wet. And, you know, that's not well going put. To keep going your way, okay? And with over 100 teams and so many games between fairly equal opponents, somebody's, you know, some guy's going to flip their coin and get heads eight times in a row. It's just statistically how it's going to happen, Chris. And yeah, then sometimes, oh, not mentioning any names, you might go 7-0 and your fans are on top of the world. But next thing you know, you lose your next three games, Pitt. That happens. Okay.
By the way, Cade Klubnik is the greatest quarterback in the history of Clemson football. God bless that man.
Yes, yes. As the when you watch and see some of the responses from Pitt fans, you know, they're the best team in the state, the 7-0 start, they got all excited. That's where I go this statistical analysis. There are some teams, they're going to be undefeated. And my point going circling back to Indiana is, yeah, they're undefeated, but they've shredded everybody except for Michigan so far, okay?
Right, and I guess that is my one area of concern with Indiana, because as you mentioned earlier, Jim, and you're right, Michigan's not good this year. Their defense is solid, but their quarterback situation, their offense is a complete mess. And when you looked at Indiana's schedule, the one concern with the Hoosiers was, man, who have these guys played? Now, to your point, they're killing everybody on their schedule, and you can only play who you've got on your schedule. I get that. But you looked at it and said, okay, they're going to go to Ann Arbor. Michigan is having a bad season. They do not want to have the stain on 2024 that they lost to Indiana in front of the home crowd. They're going to give them a game. And they did. And so when Michigan is in, you know, early November, the toughest game on your schedule in 2024, it doesn't say much about who you played so far. So if there is any sense that they have been just kind of faking it till they make it so far, I do look at the fact that the one time they played a team that you thought, maybe these guys can give them a test, it came down to late in the fourth quarter. So again, we're going to find out a lot on Saturday.
Yeah, it did. But, you know, I think you could look at any good college football team and pick out a game like that.
Sure.
Penn State had Bowling Green. Alabama had Vanderbilt, you know. Mm-hmm. So I this is not me saying Indiana's going to beat Ohio State. I'm not. But I'm thinking it's going to be a competitive game that Ohio State wins, you know, one of these, you know, 24-14 kind of games where it's not the blowout. Indiana's competitive with it, but there's no doubt at the end of the game that Ohio State is the better team. So I think that's what we're going to see, and I think that still makes Indiana a playoff team because be 11-1 Indiana.
I think the nature of the outcome definitely might dictate whether or not they get into the 12-team field, and that might not be fair, but it is what it is. I feel like, Jim, I'm not big into moral victories generally. If they play a game like that, if it's close, it's the margin of victory for Ohio State is within 10 or fewer points. To me, that's the first Rocky movie, don't you think?
Yes.
They win by just hanging in.
That is the validation they need. And there's, if you look at any of those strength of schedule numbers, I mean, theirs is ridiculously bad. It's terrible. And by the way, Penn State does not look bad in that strength of schedule setup. They don't have a lot of top 25 teams, but they have teams. I think Illinois is like 7-3 now. You know, with USC could win another game, they could be a winning team. Wisconsin, they're playing teams with 500 or better records. They're not playing a lot of, you know, Purdue's. So it's reflected in that strength of schedule, which I think is also helpful for them.
Yeah, Wisconsin did us a big solid on Saturday, I think, just by playing Oregon tough, especially because the conditions were the same. It's Camp Randall at night, and you saw how much difficulty Oregon had with that, and then you contrast that with the ease with which Penn State dispatched Wisconsin using our backup quarterback. I thought that made the Nittany Lions look very good by comparison.
I think so, too. And, you know, and people don't want to hear this. Candidly, I don't want to hear this, but if you look at it, there's argument that Ohio State's the most talented team in the country. And for them to go cross country, just barely lose out to Oregon, the number one team on their home field, I think Ohio State's going to be favored against Oregon if they do, in fact, play in the conference championship game. I think Ohio State may end up being the number one team. And Penn State played them toe-to-toe. And Penn State, I don't think, played very well. Obviously, part of that is who the opponent is. I get that. But, you know, twice inside the five and you put up 0 points. The play calling was atrocious. A lot of things that went on there. So I think that shows that Penn State can play with anybody. And when it's a conversation piece now nationally, a lot of people think Penn State's a fraud, that they don't belong where they do.
Sure.
I think maybe they aren't the fourth best team in the country, but I think they're in the top six, seven, eight teams in the country easily.
Yeah. So my theory, and I've probably shared it on this show before, about why there is so much quote unquote fraud talk around Penn State is almost that James Franklin is both a victim of his own success and his own faults. Because from his success, I say he's done such a good job reviving the program out of the sanctions era and recruiting talent to Happy Valley and fielding great competitive teams that he put Penn State back on the national radar at the highest levels very quickly. But, you know, a combination of rebuilding depth over time and also just, you know, losing some games that he shouldn't. When we got into that spotlight, Jim, we didn't always play our best football. You know, I'm thinking not so much about the record against Ohio State and Michigan, but getting upset by the likes of like Michigan State, Minnesota, Illinois, those types of teams. And so when those things happen, I think the fraud narrative starts to gain momentum.
You make a really good point, and you don't hear that for other teams. And it's funny how a national narrative gets created. And when we come back, I'm going to give you a couple examples of it. Because it is the national narrative right now. We'll hit that when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m., and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris, I'm Jim. We're talking all things college football. I'm having fun with this conversation, Chris. And when we finished up, we're talking about how Penn State and James Franklin specifically, it's become a national narrative, can't win the big game. It's gotten to the point where, I guess it's a week and a half ago now, I'm listening to a national show where they're previewing Ole Miss versus Georgia. Now, we all know Ole Miss won that game, but going into it, the talk was, Lane Kiffin has a lot of James Franklin in him. He can't win the big game. Penn State was not part of the conversation, and they were still, you know, getting thrown out there. And then after the win, a completely different source, okay, this is now a written article where the headline is, Lane Kiffin leaves James Franklin alone on the can't win the big one island. And it's like, if you're trying to talk about Lane Kiffin, you just feel like you have to bring James Franklin into this conversation and not winning the big game. It's an easy narrative to put out there. And because it's got a national support to it, It's easy to get a laugh out of it, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, you do on a certain level have to sympathize with the position these guys find themselves in. Like, you're Lane Kiffin. It's like, oh, yeah, sorry, guys. I'm sorry I didn't turn Ole Miss into a national, legitimate national title contender in 4 years. Yeah, you're right. My bad. I'm a loser. What an idiot. Maybe I should just quit coaching football. So I do sympathize with them a bit, but listen. It's not fair, and neither is life, and that's why they make $10 million a year, so cry me a river.
And that's right. Give me the $10 million, and you can be critical of me.
You can say whatever
all
you want,
you yeah, want
sure,
Chris.
Sure.
All right. Hey, you know what? I wanted to throw something else at you, more in this general college football conversation. I think we've talked about it before. In my mind, college football is the best sport out there.
Absolutely. I love it. The best.
And to me, it's listeners of our show know I'm a huge New York Mets fan. I find it hard to watch any other games if the Mets aren't involved. I'm more a Mets fan than Major League Baseball, okay?
Yeah, sure.
College football, I can watch just about any game and be happy. And it's interesting, Chris, after 2 weeks of home games where I just essentially spent the weekend, 2 weekends in a row in State College, the only game I really get to see is the Penn State game. Love the experience. Absolutely love it. However, I was ready for a weekend at home watching all these games. And just this weekend alone on Saturday, as I'm sitting in my Barca lounger flipping from game to game, I got to see Pitt make a big comeback against Clemson and then Clemson just steal it out from under them to end the game. Loved it. I got to see. Did you watch any of Missouri, South Carolina?
I did.
What a wonderful game. Now, I've spent the entire season calling Missouri a fraud.
Correct.
I still believe they're a fraud. But that South Carolina crowd was phenomenal. And Missouri makes a great comeback at the end to take the lead. And what happens? South Carolina marches right down the field, steals a win from them. That is just fantastic stuff. Georgia has to come back to beat Tennessee. Fantastic stuff, Chris. Arkansas gives Texas a game. That's fantastic stuff. The end of USC, Nebraska. Comes down to the very end, which I love the announcers joking about both fan bases saying, how is my team going to lose this game? And then you finish off the evening with Oregon really struggling, having to make a comeback at the end against Wisconsin. What a great day of college football, Chris. And that is why it's the best sport anywhere.
Yeah, no question. And it's, you touch on a bunch of things. It's the differences in style of play. It's the character of the venues and the crowds. It's the traditions, the different parts of the country, the regionality to it, which is, you know, in many ways being seeped out of the game, but it's still there. Yeah, you're preaching to the converted. Talking about college football as the best sport. And again, I'm not going to pretend that I managed to stay awake until the end of that BYU-Kansas game, but I'm sure that was exciting too. It was 10-10 at the half, and that's about as far as I made it.
I couldn't make it that far either, so that's why I didn't mention that game. But all these other games, Chris, I saw it.
Oh, and but credit to Bill. I know you love Bill O'Brien so much. Bill O'Brien's Boston College team, which is really undermanned, even in the ACC yeah. right now, continues to hang in there. They gave SMU a real fight.
They did. And that's what I really enjoy about it, Chris. And I'm obviously a Penn State person, a Penn State fan, but I have emotion about other teams. I do not like Pitt, okay? That's how I was raised, Chris. I was raised to not like Pitt. Same. So Clemson pulling that out, that game, I was the biggest Clemson fan going.
Big time.
Again,
I had it on the second screen, and I think I probably cheered as loud for that Cade Klubnik run as I did anything Penn State did against Purdue. Because really – Jim, that game's outcome, I said it was over at 14-0. That game was over at kickoff.
Yes.
Once it became a legal contest, it was over. But I was on pins and needles for that Pitt-Clemson game.
Yes, and that to me, you're a Penn Stater, Chris.
I was going to win, too, to be honest with you.
Yes,
I'm saying before the game, I thought Pitt was going to win.
Oh, I had Clemson winning and covering even, and that's, you know, partly my Pitt bias, which I acknowledge it exists. I did want to, and talking about some of these games, we've talked about officiating, Chris, and there's one specific call I want to ask you about, and that was in the Oregon-Wisconsin game. Late in the game, and Wisconsin converts a third down, gets the first down, and they were called for a chop block. And they showed the replay of it. It's in the middle of the line. I don't even think it was a penalty by the letter of the law because the second player hit the defender high. He didn't hit him low. And even the was it an NBC game? Whoever, the announcers and their official who comes in and gives his opinion all agreed. And that was at a critical, critical time. Again, I keep quoting you talking about, what was it? Don't mistake a conspiracy with incompetence.
Don't attribute to malice what can better be explained by incompetence, which should be the motto of Big Ten officiating.
It really, but it just still leads me to the, why call something that when it's so gray, okay, if that kind of call, which is irrelevant to the play, you should be really sure of it before you throw a flag on that type of thing. The tiebreaker should be you don't make the call, and it seems like sometimes they do the exact opposite.
I describe such calls, Jim, as suspiciously convenient.
The fact that it was on a third down conversion late in the game?
And would have advantaged the team who, if they won, it would have reflected poorly on the conference. Like you can step back and you don't have to believe, and shouldn't, in my opinion, that there's any kind of concerted conspiracy to influence the outcomes of games on behalf of the conference. But you can still objectively say it would be better for the Big Ten had Oregon won that game versus Wisconsin winning, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so obviously that call was convenient from the conference's perspective. And I'm not a tinfoil hat guy. I don't think there was some call that came in from Tony Petitti that said, like, hey, we need a penalty here. I don't rule out the possibility that if I'm aware of that and I understand the stakes of that game for the Big Ten and the league and for college football, those guys are employed by the Big Ten. They understand it as well. I don't rule out that there is some subconscious force at work that, you know, maybe compels the official to see a chop block where maybe there wasn't one and maybe he wouldn't have in a different situation.
Yes. And that's the kind of call that I just don't understand the philosophy. And I'm, you know, I go back to my officiating days, officiating basketball. And I know technically from the opening whistle to the end of the game, you're supposed to call it exactly the same way. But if you've got a game ending, I don't want to interject myself into the result of the game. If there's a blatant penalty, you call it. But if you have any doubt, swallow your whistle. Keep the flag in your pocket. Don't be the factor in the game. Now, if that play had gone through, there's no guarantee Wisconsin wins that game. However, you took away a really good opportunity from Wisconsin. Just keep the flag in your pocket.
Oh, yeah. That penalty narrowed. Not calling that penalty narrowed Oregon's path to victory substantially. So again, I'm not alleging there's any kind of conspiracy because I don't think there is, but we've all learned, Jim, over the last several years, last couple of decades, frankly, that it's really easy to detect voter fraud when your side loses. And when they win, everything went swimmingly and it's democracy in action, right? Well, I think maybe when you understand the gravity of the situation, it's easier to find a chop block when you maybe need one.
Well, just on that whole line, you know, the homerism of fans, this Sunday morning, I see two different articles from a Tennessee perspective. One of them actually was from from The Athletic. And it was so homeristic. Is that a word?
It is
from
now.
From Tennessee's side. Then I see another article, same kind of thing. It was after the first half of the Tennessee-Georgia game, saying how biased the officiating is, how biased the announcers are. And then they have a video showing, in their words, I'm using air quotes here, an obvious pass interference. And could you believe Kirk Herbstreit said he got there just in time, perfect timing. Well, I watched the video. Kirk Herbstreit was right. And here's this narrative. Oh, he got there way early. How in the world could Kirk Herbstreit you know, see it that way. And I'm expecting this really, really flagrant, you know, pass interference. Chris, it wasn't. It wasn't. It was exactly the kind of thing where you keep the flag in your pocket. All right, we've got one more quarter to go. We're going to do that when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hall Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Chris, I'm Jim. And I got a crazy thought here, Chris. Let's talk a little bit about Penn State and their game against Purdue. I want to start with this. I'm thinking that right now, Andy Kotelnicki is just now toying with everyone with how he with how he's using Tyler Warren.
Man, that guy really leaves you at a loss for words, just in terms of the type of player he is, right? Like I'm searching in real time here, Jim, through my mental Rolodex, and I can't remember. You probably have to go back to Michael Robinson before he took over the quarterback duties full time in the 2005 season. So earlier on in his career, when they were lining him up everywhere from quarterback to running back to wide receiver, to identify a Penn State player who was as dynamic and fun to watch doing it as Tyler Warren.
I'm with you 100%. And what's interesting is Kotelnicki's using all these crazy formations, crazy ways to use them, literally having them snap the ball through his legs, which is just crazy. You know, the play, the double pass, throwing it to Drew Aller and then being the receiver. And they showed Khalil Dinkins wide open.
Yeah,
and there's no way in the world they're going anywhere else but to Tyler Warren.
Right.
But with that said, Chris, I think there's some pretty good argument to say he's being underused. You know, really, and I'm not just pointing at, you know, the Ohio State game when they're inside the five.
Yeah.
When, hey, why is Tyler Warren not back there lining up at quarterback? But I mean, throughout the season, he's been so effective doing that, that I wonder why they're not using him more often. Now, I understand you can't give the guy the ball 80 times, but I think there's some argument that you could use him even more than you are.
Well, look, Jim, all the folks online having, I think, a justifiable conniption about the wide receiver play would strongly disagree with that view. I'm sympathetic to their position. On the other hand, at the end of the day, I don't really care how we get the yards if the guy's open and he's going to make the play. Just let him make the play. I've just kind of come to this point in my life where I'm at peace with a lot of things, and one of them is just appreciate what you have, right? Count your blessings. So if Tyler Warren, who's one of the most, as we just discussed, dynamic players the last 25 years of Penn State football, makes a play for you and you get a first down, celebrate the first down. Don't sit there and start tweeting a complaint about, why didn't we throw to a wide receiver on that play? If he's open and he's going to make the play, let him make the play and celebrate it and be happy. Have a Coke and a smile.
I'm the other way. Give it to him more. Let me just go over a couple numbers with you, Chris. Okay. Just for the fun of it.
Yeah.
And remember against USC where he had 17 catches, right? I think he was targeted 20 times. That's an 85% completion rate to the guy. And oh, by the way, he dropped one. So it should have been 90%. He had eight catches on Saturday. Do you know how many targets he had?
Eight.
You're exactly right. You're perfect. You're 8 for 8 throwing the ball to him. Throw it to him more.
Yeah.
But
why are we getting the receivers more involved? Because we've got this guy who should be a Heisman Trophy contender. In this crazy upside-down college football season, which has been one of the best in recent memory, I love the idea that you could have a two-way player, a wide receiver DB. You could have a tight end invited to New York, you know, not just have 5 quarterbacks there. Oh, actually a running back. It would be a lot of fun. So, yeah, I am all in on the Heisman campaign for Tyler Warren. And when you've got a guy like that and he's making the plays and he's open, just keep going to him until they stop it.
And there are not the quarterback candidates that there typically are. There's not somebody that's a quarterback racing away with it.
Yeah, so, Gabriel certainly did not help his case in Camp Randall Stadium on Saturday night.
No, not at all.
Yeah, so Tyler Warren to New York. Hey, just while we're talking about Warren, Jim, I want to note 2 milestones for him. So he caught a touchdown pass that put him into a tie with Pat Freiermuth for the program record for receiving touchdowns by a tight end. Now, he already has the most touchdowns total for a tight end, but receiving touchdowns, he and Pat are now tied at 16. So if he gets another one this season, he'll be alone atop the record books for tight ends in that category. And I mentioned this. I did the voiceover on the For the Bluggy Game Balls video this past week. And you can see that as well as the obligatory PSU pregame show on the For the Bluggy YouTube channel. So subscribe to that. The Big Ten's award for the best tight end in the conference is called the Kwalik Clark Trophy. So it's named after Dallas Clark from Iowa and Teddy Kwalik from Penn State. And Tyler Warren had a 127-yard receiving game against Purdue. That was his 4th 100-yard receiving game of his career, and that put him into a tie with Ted Kwalik for the most for a tight end in program history. And to me, that's appropriate because that game probably sealed up the fact that he's going to win that award that Kwalik's the namesake of.
Oh, yes, there is no doubt. And by the way, I gave the receiving stats. I want to throw in the rushing stats. 3 carries, 63 yards, average 21 yards a carry. You know what? Yeah. Give him the ball more, Chris. All right. That's my tirade on that. One other thought on the game, just on an individual. Drew Aller, very quietly, if that's possible, quietly went 17 for 19 for 247 yards. And he also, by the way, had a drop. Or he would have been 18 for 19 and over 90%. Is it possible that Drew Aller's underrated?
Yes, I think that's a fair question to ask, and I'm inclined to say to answer it yes. But still, the memory is fresh, certainly in the national consciousness of the way he played against Michigan and Ohio State and Ole Miss last year, and he didn't really do anything to diminish that against the Buckeyes in Beaver Stadium. So I still think the question for Drew is, you've improved so much. Clearly all the NFL scouts agree on that. How are you going to play in your next opportunity against a big time opponent? And if they can get past Minnesota this week and Maryland next week, he's going to get his chance to answer that question.
That playoff game will be James Franklin. It's huge for him. Second, it's Drew Aller, huge for him also. Yes. Just one more player to talk about from the game. Remember when the season started, Abdul Carter, the shift to defensive end, there were some folks who were a little disappointed early. I think he's getting the hang of the position, Chris.
Going back to officiating, it's clear to me and has been for several weeks now that officials just look at the way offensive lines are blocking Abdul Carter and they all kind of agree. I don't know, maybe they even say it out loud, but certainly subconsciously, this guy's getting held on every play. We can't have a holding call on every single play, so we're just never going to call it.
Yes, they set the new standard there. And I even theorized a few weeks ago, Chris, that maybe they're just feeling bad for the guy, the offensive tackle, because they don't have a chance. And
I don't like to complain. I don't like to be the officials are losing us the game guy at all. I don't like to be that guy. Now, I'll call out the incompetence because I think it's obvious and frequent. But listen, again, this is not Homer goggles. Go back and watch tape over the last few weeks. That guy is getting held ridiculously on the regular. And it's just because he has such a great, you know, wide variety of tools he can use to rush the passer. And I don't rule out that you're right, Jim. They just kind of subconsciously feel a little pity for these guys. And again, they can't throw a holding flag on every play, so they just don't call it at all.
And credit to him for complaining about the one time when it was really blatant and Penn State got the next two calls.
Yes, right. And I think there was a little something to that. Like they were trying to send a signal like, guys, you have to make it a little less obvious, please.
Yes, at least make an effort to not hold. just try not to hold. Try to make it not look like holding, not blatant. Anyway, one final thought, Chris, and we were talking about this a little bit on the break. I want to look ahead, college football playoffs. To me, it's now become pretty clear. It's 4-4-4. Four teams from the Big Ten, we know who they are. Four teams from the Southeast Conference, we don't know who they are. And then the other four, Notre Dame, ACC, Big 12, and the Group of Five rep. That's how the playoff's going to be. The big question is going to be the mess that's being created in the Southeast Conference, where if, you know, Texas A&M and Texas are the only two teams with one loss in conference, and whoever wins that game will go to the conference championship game. But then you have just a slew of two-loss teams. And the mess, it's not just about playing in the Southeast Conference championship game. It's going to be essentially their 16-4 playoffs in the Southeast Conference.
Yeah, I think the committee is privately hoping that, to touch on an earlier point in our conversation, that James Franklin pulls a James Franklin this week out at Minnesota and or Ohio State just blows the doors off Indiana, which would open up the, you know, open the door for them to be able to let at least one of those SEC teams in. And I do think your analysis is sound, but if Ohio State destroys Indiana, I don't rule out that drops them out of the 12 team field, especially because of the situation in the SEC. But yeah, I mean, these guys are going to have to do their jobs and we're going to have no idea what reasoning they put into it, because the process is totally opaque. Live stream the committee meetings.
Well, which had been your suggestion before, and I love it. And what's interesting is Georgia, Ole Miss, and Alabama. I think Georgia has the best resume because they now have wins over Tennessee, Texas, and Clemson. Yeah. But Ole Miss and Alabama both beat Georgia head-to-head. So how do you figure that one out?
You got to disappoint somebody, and I got bad news for Ole Miss fans, like brand controls. I think Georgia and Alabama get the benefit of the doubt in that situation if it does come down to a 2 out of 3.
Well, what I wonder is the loser of A&M Texas, I think, will be out because they don't have the schedule strength. Agreed. And then you just hope that, you know, the two-loss team in the conference championship game loses a third game. And that helps you out. That's all. That's what the committee could pray for. All right, Chris, that's going to be it for the show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.